This episode is sponsored by Balanced Bridge. Balanced Bridge has been providing cost-friendly capital solutions to professional athletes since 2015. They have dedicated professionals who understand the industry and are ready to customize a repayment plan catered to the athlete's situation and financial objectives. Their platform features no broker fees, a variety of repayment and pricing options, and no prepayment penalties. Whether you or your client are a professional athlete that is looking to invest or make a purchase without having to deplete their cash reserves, or is simply needing a small bridge to support their cash flow through the remainder of the offseason, reach out to Balanced Bridge and let them propose a solution for you. For more information, check out the description. Welcome to A Frugal Athlete Podcast, where we interview athletes, both current and former, on the prudent financial practices and smart career decisions they are making. In these episodes, we dive into what it means to be a frugal athlete. You might think that frugal just means being cheap, but as you will soon learn, being frugal is more complex than that. Hey, what's up? I'm Amobi Okugo, a.k.a. A Frugal Athlete. So check this out. We came out with an all-new, extensive, brand-new course. Our course, Rookie Mistakes, is a course that helps young athletes and individuals avoid the common mistakes when starting your career. I provide real-life examples, lessons, insights, all that and more to teach you how to identify the rookie mistakes before you make them. And trust me, I've made a lot. It's all about giving yourself the best foundation and head start to build financial and career stability. For more information or to get the course, check out the link in bio. Hey, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of A Frugal Athlete Podcast. Today, we got a very special guest, part of the fraternity, the soccer fraternity, fellow professional soccer player, fellow Nigerian. Can I say Nigerian American?
Yeah, Nigerian, Canadian, American. I'm all three at once.
Respect. So we got Tesho Akindele. He currently plays for Orlando City as a forward. So we got him joining the podcast. How you doing, Tesho?
I'm doing so good, Amobi. It's great to be here. I've been following your work for a while, so I'm just happy to chop it up with you now.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, obviously we've played against each other a couple of times. And when you first came into the league, I remember you because there was this big talk about you being in engineering school and whether you were going to like continue, graduate first and go pro or like leave early. So give us some context. I know I'm kind of going starting all over the place, but give us some context into the decision of you going pro and having to leave school a little bit earlier than expected.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, first of all, like I went to a small Division II school called the Colorado School of Mines, and it's like only engineering. And I had like Division I offers to go play maybe in California, play soccer. But me, my family, I mean, you know how it is with Nigerian parents. Education is serious. Yeah. So I kind of chose that school because of education before soccer. And then when I found out I was probably going to get drafted, I told my parents I'm going to leave school early before I graduate, and they were not happy.
What was that conversation like? Because I feel like, I mean, every Nigerian American professional athlete had to have that conversation. So what was it like for you?
Yeah. Well, for me, because so I didn't know for sure if I was going to get drafted, but I was like, I have to right now. I'm going to leave school. And if I get drafted, great. If I don't, then I'll try to play like in the USL or in ASL. And so I asked my parents because they were like helping me pay for my food and stuff. So I said, can you guys just make sure to pay for me through like February or March, like so I could figure it out if I don't get drafted? And they said no. They said, if you're going to leave school, you have to figure it out on your own. So I was like, man, pressure's on, you know. Luckily, I balled out at the combine, and then I was able to get drafted. So I didn't have to like panic or anything, but the pressure was on me for real. And, you know, they said, like, if you really want to do this, you got to do it. Like, we're helping you to go to school, but we're not helping you just to do that. So it was tough. But obviously now they're happy for me, you know what I'm saying? I think it was a good balance. Like, you have some parents that kind of push kids to go professional when I think that they shouldn't, and they leave school and they kind of throw their education behind. So maybe my parents were a little conservative on that, but I think that mentality helped me, you know, back then and still now.
No, it's funny because it's like the pressure that they gave you helped you fool you to become a professional soccer player. And you've been playing over 8 years, like way above the average. And you've done well, you know, playing for the Canadian national team as well. Talk about, you know, you talked about pursuing professionally, but you strategically went to a school that was strictly for engineering. So did you have inclinations or aspirations to go pro before going to that school? Or was it, how did that kind of go about?
Yeah, honestly, like I knew I was a good player, but I didn't think too much about becoming a pro when I was going to college. I was like, I know I'm a good player, but you know, I want to go to a school that has a good team and but get a good education. And then during my freshman year, like I had 1 week when I scored 10 goals in 3 games, and then there was like I got all this media attention and stuff. And then that was kind of the moment that I was like, okay, I could go pro. And then after my freshman year, I had a ton of D1 school reaching out to me, like, you need to transfer if you want to become a professional. Mm-hmm. And I talked to my coach, his name is Frank Kohlenstein from the School of Mines, just a great guy. And I told him what was going on. He said he believes he could help me become a pro from that school. And he did, you know, he definitely helped me out a lot. So, you know, I was happy with the decision to stay there.
That's what it's all about. I really love that, because sometimes you got to stay where you're at. That gives you the best resources to, you know, fulfill your potential. A lot of times people will come out the woodworks and saying, you need to do this, you need to do that. But if you're in a good situation, don't take that for granted. I want to backtrack a little bit, because obviously we talked about our similar Nigerian upbringing, but you mentioned Canada, America, Nigeria. Talk about that upbringing and how it's kind of helped you into how you are today.
So I was born in Canada, and then my mom's Canadian, my dad's Nigerian. So that kind of is a good blend. And then we moved to the US when I was 7, grew up in Colorado. And so I've just seen lots of different kinds of people, lots of different places. And I think, you know, one thing that I would say really stuck out to me the most is when I was in probably 7th grade, I went back to Nigeria. And I've only been to Nigeria a few times. And so this is the first time I went when I was like old enough to know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I saw where my dad grew up and where my family was living. And my family in Nigeria isn't like poor by any means, but it was just a huge wake up call to like what the world is like. And it just gave me a huge sense of like gratitude for everything I had. And, you know, I was just a kid. I was like 12, 13 years old, but that was such a strong thing for me as a kid. And I still feel that now, like every day when I go play soccer, even if I have the worst day or we lose or whatever, I just feel so grateful to be able to play soccer, to be able to live in this country, to have a family, like all this stuff. And I think that message, that mentality has just stuck with me really strong throughout my career.
I got chills when you said that, because that's like when my first experience going back to Nigeria, it really just like, why are we complaining? And like you said, not to say that your family back home is like struggling, but just their appreciation for different things that happen on a day-to-day basis is like stuff that we're spoiled up about.
Even like a small example is like, we'd be in my family's house, middle-class family in Nigeria, the power just goes out and you sit there in the dark until the power comes back on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like, that's just normal. They weren't complaining about it. Or like to take a shower, we had to boil hot water, pour it into cold water, and dump it on yourself, stuff like that. And that's just, it's just like, it was whatever for them. And I was thinking, man, you know, like back home, I probably, the lights went out, power went out, I got a shower like this, and it was just fine, you know, and I got by fine. Like, I'm still okay. So little things like that, you don't need to complain about. Life's good.
Exactly. So, all right, jump into your professional career. You had a great, you know, college career, you know, you got scouted. Now you get drafted to FC Dallas. Talk about that experience, you know, getting drafted, finally coming into your own money. Obviously, you're in a place now where you're pretty good, but was it always like this? Did you always know, like, have an idea from a financial standpoint of what you wanted to do?
I would say, like, I've always been kind of a frugal person. So, I definitely relate to your brand, Frugal Athlete. My first year in the league, they were actually talking about possibly having a strike the next year. So my mentality was like, save everything, completely save everything. So, you know, I was making a minimum salary at the time for the league, and I saved a lot of money that year. Luckily, we didn't go on strike. So I had money saved up, and I kind of just snowballed from there. I've never been one to spend money on too many things. My wife is the one in the family who likes to spend money more than me. So yeah, my first year in the league, even though I was on minimum, I was able to save a lot. And I think I've kind of tried to keep my lifestyle in check since then.
No, that's what it's all about. How was it like within the locker room setting when, you know, other guys are a little bit more competitive or, you know, making a little bit more money and they're spending? How are you able to keep that mentality, that discipline in saying, I'm going to save my money, I'm not worried about what anyone else is doing, this is what I need to do to build out my money management? strategy.
Yeah, I mean, people will definitely give you a hard time if you don't have the nicest shoes or the newest car or whatever, but it's just never bothered me. Like, I feel comfortable in the things I have, and I feel comfortable that I know what I'm using my money for, you know. Mm-hmm. To me, buying new shoes or a new car, new clothes, that doesn't make me as happy as knowing that, you know, my family is going to be secure for now and into the future.
That's a great point. Were there any different terms or stuff that you wish you knew from that rookie year or those early years as a professional that you wish you knew?
Yeah, there's, I can think of two big lessons I learned. One is taxes. Like, I had no idea that you could ever have to pay taxes back. And so after that year, it was tax time, like, you know, halfway through my second year. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to see how much money I get back in taxes. And I had to pay like $3,000 or $4,000 back. And I didn't know that was possible. Yeah. You know, so that was a huge lesson. And then I would say just also be wary of financial advisors sometimes. There's definitely really good financial advisors out there, but there's some who are more salesmen, and they might try to sell you like a life insurance product you don't really need as a young athlete. I see that a lot. So I would say those are two lessons that I kind of learned in my rookie year.
Is there that's a great point you brought about the financial advisors. And yeah, we can go on and on about taxes. Just simply you're playing in Texas, so no state income tax, but still you get taxed on other places you play, different things like that. But from the financial advisor standpoint, is there like questions athletes should be asking? Like, how do you know to stay away from that person versus finding another person that's better suited for your needs?
I think one question is, are you a fiduciary? Which means, like, do you legally have to do what's best for my financial interest? Because some financial advisors do not have to do what is best for your financial interest, which is crazy to me, but it's true. So ask them if they're a fiduciary. Also, I would say, just kind of in general, if my opinion personally, I know people might argue this, but if they're selling different products, they're usually, they have a conflict of interest, I would say, if they're selling new products. So maybe look for people who don't sell products and just give more advice, I think is a better way to go.
No, I like that a lot. And definitely, if you're listening, this is our disclaimer. Make sure you consult with your financial experts or team or lawyer, whoever you need to. But these are definitely questions that you should be asking whoever is working around your money. So when did that shift happen for you in terms of like, all right, you're making a salary playing in the league, but now you want to do more. Obviously, you're into real estate. You're into some other different ventures. When did that shift happen for you?
I think there's like a few different things. One is, one of my friends introduced me to mint.com, which I'm sure you know about. It's just like a budgeting software. It helps you track how much you're spending and your net worth and stuff like that. So I had always just been saving, but then I was able to like see it on the spreadsheet, see the kind of progress I was making. So that was big. And honestly, just recently, like I've been saving for a while, doing different things. And then I signed a new contract last year, and that was kind of a big motivation for me, because I was like, okay, I know I'm going to be in Orlando for a few years. And in, you know, in our job, we don't have that kind of safety all the time. So when you know that you're going to be in one place for a few years, you got a signing bonus. That's when I kind of really dove in hard with the more investing side of things. Up till then, you know, I had been putting money into my 401k, saving, stuff like that. But after I got a new contract, I was able to kind of expand and do some of the real estate stuff and other stuff we've been doing now.
No, that's amazing. Before we touch on the real estate, I just want to make a point, like the fact that you waited. You know, a lot of times people expect that, all right, I'm a pro, I'm going to be a pro forever. The next contract is going to come regardless. You waited until the contract was set in stone to make sure you're making those next moves. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people spend money before they even have it, like knowing like, I'm going to be playing 10 years. I do this, I do that. I'm going to make this. And then they're spending money. Next thing you know, an injury happens, coach doesn't like them, whatever may have you. But the fact that you were patient and you saw long-term, it's good, because there's no like race to get to financial literacy or wealth, whether it happens in year one. It's a one person race. Exactly. So real estate, let's get into it. I'm gonna let you tell the story because I got the backstory. Real estate. Talk about your first property, or what was the introduction into real estate for you?
So for me, my dad had met somebody who was investing in rental properties in Kansas City. And he was telling me, oh, Tesho, you got to check this out. You know, they have good rental properties. You can buy houses for pretty cheap and rent them out for a good amount. And I was kind of just kicking the can. I wasn't really doing anything until I signed my new contract. And I was like, okay, I'm in. So he had actually bought a few rental properties on his own. And so I just used his
contract. The gentleman or your dad?
My dad had.
Okay.
Yeah. And then so when I signed my new contract, I talked to his contacts over there and I was able to start investing, find a few properties of my own. And we've been able to kind of expand from there.
That's amazing. So what was the first property like? Like, how was that process? Like, how did you go about it? Is there any like advice that you had for someone? Because a lot of athletes, they love the real estate just because it's tangible. You know, they can like, if they need to go to the property to see like, this is my asset. So real estate's a great avenue for investing. What was that process like for you? If you could advise any athlete to focus on, what would that be?
I guess the first thing I would say is, even though I hadn't done anything yet, I had always been interested in real estate and I was learning. So one of the best places to learn about real estate, in my opinion, is the site called Bigger Pockets. They have a podcast. They have a forum that's basically like Facebook for real estate investors that people just talk about everything real estate related. So I would say, honestly, if you're really interested in it, make sure to learn. Like, I could give you a few pieces of advice, but there's so many things that you need to learn, and just listen to podcasts. They put out a podcast a week. If you listen to like 30 of those podcasts, you'll be good. You know, you can go back and listen to old ones. But and then after that, I was just saying, okay, my goal in real estate is to build cash flow. So I want, they call something the 1% rule, that you want houses where the monthly rent that you can collect is 1% of the price of the house, basically. So if you buy a house for $100,000, you want a house that rents for at least $1,000. Or if you buy a house for $50,000, it needs to rent for $500 if you're trying to produce cash flow. So Kansas City has a lot of houses where, for example, I bought a house for $50,000 and it was able to rent for like $800. So that's even better than, you know, the 1% rule. And you can just get a lot of cash flow that way. So do your research. But if you're looking for cash flow, a lot of times the 1% rule is a great kind of marker to think about.
No, I love that rule. I'm definitely gonna write that down. It's so interesting because you can get into real estate in so many different ways. So from this standpoint, did you have like a property manager, or the experts that you're working with, they kind of handle it and you're kind of the investor behind that?
Yeah, no, I've been doing pretty much everything. So I have a property manager. I have a realtor. Those are probably the two most important contacts you need to make right off the bat. And then, especially because it's out of state, you know, so what I would do to find a house, basically, I would see one on the MLS, or somebody would come to me and say, hey, we have a deal. My realtor goes to the property. He does a video tour with me because I'm in Orlando. He's in Kansas City. And if I say, okay, I like it, let's put an offer, then you can get a property inspection, check that everything is in working order. And after you get the house under contract, then your property manager takes over. They can find a tenant for you. They can do any repairs that are needed. They help coordinate that. They collect rent when the tenant's in there. So in the front end, the realtor is very important, but over the long run, having a good property manager, especially doing it long distance the way I am, is key. The property manager is the person controlling everything.
Yeah, you're right. It's tough with our careers, you know, to try to, if say something happened, you'd have to like fly over there or find someone to help you out. Just like delegating that work is big time. Mm-hmm. And then now you have multiple properties now in the Kansas City area, correct?
Yeah, I have multiple properties now, yeah.
And then one of your goals is to use this cash flow to help, you know, low income families. Can you talk about that like as a mission for you?
Yeah, I was able to connect with a guy that lives in Kansas City and invests in real estate. And his whole mission is just, well, his bigger mission is to end poverty, but he's kind of doing it through real estate. So a lot of you hear about the slumlord, you know, stereotype of landlords, especially in the low income areas. I think it's such a problem. Like, people will go buy cheap houses and they treat tenants badly, and they don't make repairs. And I want to be the exact opposite of that. You know, like, I want anybody who lives in a house I own to be treated completely with respect. If they fall behind on rent for some reason that's out of their control, I want to help connect them with the right resources and stuff like that. So this guy, he's a property manager and that's his whole mission. And he's been great. And anytime a tenant has had an issue with pain or personal problems, they connect them with the right agencies and stuff like that. It's been a good experience. And another thing that this guy does, which I'm hoping to get into in the future, is called rent to own. So he'll buy a house for, so in Kansas City, there's a lot of abandoned houses, and that's a problem in a lot of low income neighborhoods. There's abandoned houses.
Yeah.
And it's hard to have pride in your neighborhood when your neighbor's house is abandoned and maybe who knows what is going on in the house. So this guy, he buys abandoned houses, rehabs them to a decent level, and then puts somebody in the house on a rent to own contract, meaning that they pay every month basically as they would if they were paying rent. But after a few years, like 10 years, they own the house. And so it kind of helps people buy back their own neighborhood, you know, especially in Kansas City. Some of these houses are cheap that banks don't want to loan on a house that's so cheap, or somebody's credit score isn't good enough. So people can't buy houses in their own neighborhood. And I really like the idea of helping people buy back the houses in their neighborhood instead of some investor coming from who knows where, flipping the house to a crazy amount and then selling it for a price they can't afford, you know.
That's
instead
true.
Fix it to a normal amount, make it a normal house for that neighborhood, and like help somebody buy that house. So long-term, that's definitely where I'm going. Right now, I've just been doing normal rentals and just trying to treat my tenants nicely. But long-term, I think the rent to own is really good, a really good system.
No, that's great. That's great because I feel like you have like a purpose behind your investing. And I think the best investors, the best people with their money always have sort of like a larger mission, a larger vision for what they want to do. It's not just, you know, to live an extravagant, lavish lifestyle. It's to, you know, whether it's build generational wealth, make impact in the communities that they want to serve. And I feel like that's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's my goal for sure. I think it's a good, real estate provides a good way to give back while also, you know, making good money. Like, of course, I'm trying to make money for myself, but I think that I can also help a lot of people and hopefully neighborhoods along the way.
That's what it's all about. So let's talk about education. You know, Nigerian, Canadian American upbringing. I know the Nigerian. That's why engineer, doctor, lawyer, those are like the three jobs that were allocated to get. But you broke the needle by going into professional sports. You had to leave school early, but you ended up getting your undergrad and master's. Talk about that process. How are you able to, you know, time manage while playing a professional soccer career?
Yeah. So my first year in the league, I was trying to look at my options for finishing my engineering degree. And there wasn't really any because you have to kind of go on campus to do that. Mm-hmm. And then luckily the league struck up a partnership with SNHU, Southern New Hampshire University, and they had fully online degrees. So I jumped on that right away, started doing classes in the afternoon. We would practice in the morning. I'd go home, do an hour or two of classes every day. I was able to finish my undergrad just in general studies doing that. And then I just kept going. So then I started doing my master's degree in finance, just finished that up a couple months ago. But yeah, the partnership was perfect because I would just go to practice, come home, chill for a little bit, and then do like an hour or two of homework all online. And you just do one class at a time.
Yeah.
It took me, I don't know, 5 years or 6 years to finish my undergrad and get my master's. So it was a long time, but you just kind of get used to it. As professional athletes, we have a lot of free time, a lot of free time. And people just really don't understand this. Like you have to do something with your free time. I remember my first year before I started school, I was watching The Office on Netflix, and a like notification popped up. It was on my Xbox and it said, "Oh, achievement unlocked. You've been watching this show for 8 hours." And I was like, no, I felt so bad about myself. You know, I was like, I'm just killing time right now. So I was lucky to be able to jump into school. And now real estate has kind of taken over as how I fill my time. I try to just make some calls and look for new investment opportunities. But if you're an athlete, you have to do something in your free time. You can't go home and just play video games. You can still play video games and then do like 3 hours of work, like build a business, start investing, you know, even if it's doing art or something like that, take advantage of your free time.
No, that's, I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. Can you talk about like taking advantage of the resources though? Because a lot of athletes, I mean, this partnership, obviously MLS just signed a new partnership with South Carolina University. Great, great opportunity for athletes to continue their education. Talk about why continuing education was so important. And talk about athletes taking advantage of the resources that are available to them, you know, these opportunities, whether it's education, networking, you know, externships, internships, things like that.
Yeah. So, I guess in terms of networking and stuff, like you're only an athlete for a certain amount of time. And, you know, if I say, hey, I'm Tesho Akindele, I play for Orlando City, someone's probably going to answer my call right now. But if I say, I'm Tesho Akindele, I used to play soccer, they might not answer your call. You know, so you have to make those relationships and do things while you're playing. It's very important. And then in terms of taking advantage of resources, I think a lot of players maybe don't know what resources are out there. But just ask, like, especially if you're in the MLS, they have people who are, their full-time job is dedicated to helping you finish school or helping you get internships or externships. There's a ton of stuff available to you. And if you do it while you have that professional soccer player, you know, name behind you, it just opens up a lot of doors as opposed to waiting until you're a former professional athlete or whatever.
No, exactly. And like one thing I tell athletes too, it's like, would you rather finish it and then retire and you don't have to worry about going back to school? Or would you rather wait and now you're playing catch up because you didn't take advantage of the free time you have? Now, usually when you're retired, you have a family, you have kids. Like the only time is, you know, and you're probably going to have to work unless you sign like a big, big deal. So how do you take advantage of the resources and availability that you have during your career?
Yeah. And I think a lot of guys maybe say, oh, I'm not going to need my degree because I'm going to go into coaching or I'm going to walk straight into the front office and they know me. But it's like, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, maybe you don't, like, honestly, hopefully I don't need my degree. Hopefully real estate is just going good for me and I don't need to use my degree, but maybe I will, you know, and I have it as another tool in my pocket now. And, you know, I'm glad I don't, like you said, I'm not waiting until I'm done. I have a kid, I have a wife. I wouldn't have time after I'm done playing to do this.
No, exactly. And even like from that standpoint of education, if you want to coach college, you have to have a degree. Mm-hmm. So like open up your horizons, open up your opportunities. If you have that degree, it will help you expand if you're looking to get into coaching. Talk about like, what would you say your advice to athletes would be just from a general money management standpoint?
I would say my first piece of advice is track your money, like either mint.com, which I use, or I've heard YNAB and a few other people use. But the first thing is to just know your, like, how much money do you have? How much money are you spending? What are you spending it on? I think that's a huge first step. And a lot of people don't do that. Like a lot of people have no idea how much money they have, how much money they spend. So that's the first step. And then the second step is to figure out how you're going to invest your money. So if you feel confident enough to do it yourself, you can do that. You could find a good financial advisor. And there, you know, there's stocks that you can invest in. You can invest in real estate. Those are two good ways. But at some point, you can't just save money. You have to invest your money if you really want to make a difference and grow your wealth.
No, that's a great point. So how do you, because obviously people in the locker room talk, I know locker rooms like crypto. I know people do real estate, people do stocks. Obviously, you want to be diversified, but how do you stay within your investment strategy and also explore new ones? Like, what's your philosophy around that or strategy?
That's a good question, honestly. I think a good way that I think about it is, would I buy this asset if I couldn't sell it for like 5 years? So for me, like crypto, I'm not sure exactly what's going on. Like, I think there's a lot of opportunities in crypto, but I don't know if I would be comfortable putting a lot of money into one of them and having to hold on to it for 5 years, you know? So, but like, if I was to buy like an ETF share of the S&P 500, I would feel comfortable holding that for 5 years. Or if I'm going to buy a rental property, I'd feel comfortable holding that for 5 years. So to me, that's kind of the way I decide what's an investable asset and what's not, is like, am I comfortable holding on to this for the long term?
No, that's big time. And then one quote that you talked about that I really like is, you can afford anything, but not everything. Expand on that, please.
Yeah, that comes actually from this lady, Paula Pant, who she's just a good person. You can follow her on Twitter and stuff, but it's like, you can have anything you want, but you just need to pick what's important to you. You know, like for me, free time is really important. So I'm trying to like buy assets so I can have free time. For some people, having a nice car is important. So you can get that car, but then you can't have the free time. You know, or you can get those shoes, but you can't have the free time. So I think if you really think about what's important in your life, you can have all of the things that are important to you. But if you're just doing everything that everybody tells you is cool, you're not gonna have enough to go around.
No, that's great. That's all I got, Tesho. Is there anything that you want to share with the audience? Things that you got coming up in the works? How can people connect with you? Once again, I think, you know, you're an athlete that a lot of athletes can follow, not just athletes, individuals, you know, from the education standpoint to, you know, maximizing your career to doing some different things off the field as well. But is there anything you want the listeners to take away from your story and your piece of advice?
I think first of all is get on mint.com or on YNAB. Track
your money. Are you a Mint ambassador?
We gotta get the Mint sponsorship. Honestly, I love it. I push it on everybody because I love it so much. But use one of those sites, track your money. That's first. Number two, I would say is I just read a book recently called Atomic Habits. It changed my life, honestly. Like I'm trying to track my habits, set goals, and I feel like a much more productive person. And I feel like I have a clear purpose and I'm like heading every day towards that. So I would highly recommend the book Atomic Habits. And then I guess just follow me on social media. I'm Tesho13 on everything. And if you go on Bigger Pockets, I'm on there too. Just Tesho Akindele on Bigger Pockets. So just find me, connect with me. If you want to talk investing, I'm here.
No, that's what it's all about. And then lastly, because I feel like you've definitely exemplified what it means to be a frugal athlete. What does a frugal athlete mean to you?
That's a good question. A frugal athlete is somebody who knows what they want, I guess. Like I said, you can afford anything, but not everything. A frugal athlete, they know what's important to them and they spend money on that, and they know what's not important to them and they cut back in those areas. You know, you can still live a good life and spoil yourself, but just make sure you're spoiling yourself on things that actually make you happy.
No, I love it, man. Thank you so much, Tesho. It's always a pleasure to connect with you. Definitely when we be keeping in touch more, I definitely want to learn more about this this real estate stuff that you got going on.
Sure, I got you, bro. And I want to follow your journey too. I love that you're just spreading this message, getting so many just smart athletes' voices out there. I appreciate your work.
No, most definitely. Definitely catch you soon.
Thank you for tuning in to this podcast episode. For more information, check out the show notes and go to our website, www.afrugalathlete.com. If you enjoyed, please leave a favorable rating and review and share and subscribe. Thank you so much.